Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we check in with our resident occupational therapist, Rye Stinson of Johns Hopkins, to let you know what you need to do to improve your game. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to check in with some rehabilitation. Why? Because we can, and because this guest was so popular in the last few times that they came on the show, people say, I want to hear more from them on a regular basis. So we said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So we had to reach out to Rye Stinson, our go-to rehabilitation guy. You know, we bring you Dr. Bob Winters from a mental side. We bring you Kai Fuser from a get fits kind of standpoint, and some other guys contribute to the show like Bob Toski. And we also have now added Rye Stinson from the Johns Hopkins Rehabilitation and Care Center. They're all over the place. Johns Hopkins is one of the companies taking over the medical field. So if you want to get better, you can do that. The golf facility based between Washington and Baltimore is where Rye is based. But we hear he's out and about. We hear so much going on in this guy's life. We wanted to also talk about that, and we will. But first, before that, let's welcome Rye Stinson back to the show. Thanks for making time, Rye. Your schedule is so busy. We're glad to cut out a little slice just for everybody that listens to the show.
Hey, anything for you, Keith. I'm happy to be on the show, and yeah, it's good to hear your voice, man.
Well,
good
thank
to be
you.
Back.
Thank you. So our researchers have found out a couple of things. Let's start with the Maryland Amateur. Now, this guy is a good player, so he's not just rehabbing you from a golf standpoint, etc. He knows a little bit about the game. He can play some stick, and apparently he's good enough to qualify for the Maryland Amateur. How did that go this week for you?
It was great to qualify. I was fortunate enough to medal in that, and I also qualified for the Philadelphia or Gap Amateur. A little bit rough on the back nine for me, so it was a treat to be out at Columbia Country Club. It's just obviously a first-class facility, and they do such a great job hosting. So, you know, certainly some challenging holes and some tough lies and all sorts of different shapes and angles and slopes out there. So it's a heck of a walk, but a very enjoyable one. So always good to be out playing in anything competitively. So I still enjoy that. So I definitely appreciate what it takes to still do that and make time for that. So happy to very much relate to folks as they try to reach their goals, whether they're Maryland Amateurs or stuff that you see on TV, or just getting out and playing their first nine after injury, after something big. So, yeah.
Well, Columbia Country Club is a storied golf course. It is a little bit landlocked because it lies between East West Highway and Connecticut Avenue, for those who know the D.C. area a little bit, just enough to be dangerous from that standpoint. Certainly have had a long-standing relationship. Bobby Dolan, long time teaching pro after the coach retired and hung it up, Bill Strasbaugh. And Bobby's kind of on the backside of his career too, and I think he's handing the reins over if he hasn't already at Columbia. What a great track! I've been fortunate to play there a few times, so it's always interesting. So know it a little bit, enough to be dangerous, but I know those hills and everything you're talking about. And of course, we had the great Merrill Frank on the show from Columbia in past years as well. So very hilly course. Only plays well. What did it play for you this week?
I think the card says somewhere around 65-ish. It's hard because they have some new tee boxes and things out there. Obviously, with the elevation and some wind and things, it's a little different. But you definitely have to think your way around there. For me, how the course sets up, there's a lot of scenarios where it's kind of indecisive on driver, four wood kind of thing. So makes it tough. It's always good when it's a tough challenge, and you know, you learn and you get better.
Yeah, so. There you go. I said it was landlocked. It's been 6,500 for a while now. So for many yeah, years. Yeah. So there we go. So they've rearranged some things. Do what you can do, but it doesn't mean 6,500 yards is an easy walk in the park. So as Rye will tell you on this hour as well, because it's just, you know, it's a beautiful course, always well maintained, and great people at Columbia Country Club. But it definitely, there's a reason they have, I think they still have a waiting list to get in there if it's people really want to get beat up. What is it about like Congressional and Columbia and some other courses around the U.S. and North America that people want to get in line to get beat up on the golf course?
Yeah. You know, I love playing challenging courses. I think obviously like your Columbias and your Congressionals, there's so much more there too. There's very, you know, incredible facilities and elaborate clubhouses and social scenes and things. Some of my favorite golf course, probably that I've ever played, is probably one of, if not one of the hardest in the country. And it's over at Pikewood National. And it's truly, talk about a walk. That's it's as good as it gets, but it is incredibly hard, like Oakmont hard, if not harder. And I don't know, there's a little bit of, I guess we're just suckers for that as golfers. You love the challenge and you're grateful for it. If golf was super easy and we all went out and shot 59 every time, I don't think we would play for as long and for as much. So it's nice to have a challenge, and sometimes it's also nice for it to be somewhat reasonable. So I totally get that too.
Yeah, no, I could do 59. 59 is a special number for me, so I could do those, anywhere close. Sure. You know, sometimes you'll take an 89 or a 99, depending on where you're playing, but join the game, getting out there. And I tell people all the time, I've prayed more on a golf course than I ever have in church. And that is true. But people who have never been on a golf course, and I know majority of our listeners are golfers in some semblance, and we appreciate that. It's a great game, although golf is a four-letter word, and I stand by that as well. So, to see people still be enamored with the game and get out there and try to improve their game, try to improve it through varying things to do to that improvement is really – It's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you get a guy that comes in, you got an injury, and I had heard also that you tweaked your knee. Who'd have known this stellar, athletic kind of guy can still have ailments as well.
We're not perfect humans walking around claiming this out of the other. No, I think one of the things that happens over time is obviously golfers bring a lot of things to the course. So we all kind of have some layers of some stuff that it can flare and rise and fall in certain demanding positions or things and that kind of stuff. But I think one of the enjoyable things about working with folks is peeling back some of those in a non-intimidating way. A lot of times you can come in and even as a golfer, you're feeling, oh my gosh, this is so frustrating. This is like the end of the world here. Am I ever going to do this, that, or the other? And having a resource to process that through and figure out, okay, what do we got going on? What can we do? What can we level up? What needs some relative rest and that sort of deal? These are the same things we have to remind ourselves. I mean, we are no different. The majority of my patients, a lot of times, are other healthcare providers and surgeons and nurses and therapists and so on and so forth. So we are no more special. We just happen to have a fair amount of experience and knowledge in the area. And
I tell people I could be PT certified. I'm certifiable for sure, but PT certified, because when you get a, and who knew an arm bike
could work? Sessions there. I don't know.
Exactly. This is probably why I do this show this is my therapy right here. Now, who knew an arm bike could wear you out so much? It's like, what is going on here? Go warm up on the arm bike, and then you're already sweating.
Arm bikes scare me. We don't have any arm bikes. That's kind of sometimes not that they're Not that they're terrible and that there aren't scenarios where they can be helpful. Sometimes they're used as sort of like filler, like, hey, I've got to fill some time, hang out on this bike kind of thing. We don't have any of that stuff. There's so many things that can be sneaky challenging when it comes to a rehab standpoint. And most of that is because usually it's easier for somebody who's looking not just what you're feeling, but looking at you from the outside and noticing, oh, geez, this is actually something that needs to be leveled up. And a lot of times it's very easy to work on things that you're already very good at. The golfer knows that very well. Like, hey, I hit my iron so well, but and I just struggle with chip. Maybe not so much. I got to do that. But golly, it's so fun hitting these shots that I'm already really good at. So the same sort of thing goes with a lot of fitness and exercise and what I would really probably call your collective training. It's easy to fall into some of those patterns. And again, I don't think anybody is immune to that. It'd be kind of a little crazy to think if you were somehow. For sure.
All right. So earlier this week when you were playing in the Maryland Amateur, you tweaked your knee.
We're getting into that.
Yeah, so okay. I want to get, I found this out because somebody was out there and I saw you. And like, what happened to this guy? He tweaked his knee. And so people get injured during rounds of golf. Thank you very much for being the test dummy on this, subject on this.
Yep.
So what does somebody do? How do you adjust your game? If you can continue and not have to withdraw, what do you do?
I'd say there's physical and mental adjustments. Obviously, if you can't go, and there's a scenario where, just like there is with any other sport, you're like, I can't. There's more a chance for more harm than good here. Then you shut it on down. That makes some sense. But I think for me, if there's a way to play through, and I think everybody's got something going on. There's this amazing amount of things that people are working through and surviving their day with that, you, me, or anybody else wouldn't know about. So there's probably two pieces to that. There's a physical piece and a mental piece. And I think for me, having played enough sports at some different levels, and that, mentally, I think it's a nice reminder to just do the best you can with what you have in the place you are and the time you're given. And that's a wonderful piece to remember for life. And I actually, that's something that I learned from a friend growing up who at the time, Jeff Hadley, both golfers who passed away from ALS. But those are some messages that I carry with me. And so if I can do my best in a safe way, and obviously some resources to do some treatment afterwards, I'm certainly going to do that. And I think mentally, you say, hey, well, this is what I can do, and that's that. And it's very easy to get into a panicked kind of mode, but I think a more appropriate one, if you can find it, is, here's this challenge. I'm fortunate enough to get a chance to take it on and do my very best with it. So, it's very easy in golf to make, and life and all sorts of things to make different excuses and different things. And that's sometimes that's part of the deal. But at the same time, again, a lot of good to be felt about, I gave it my very best and that's what I could do today. And that's awesome. So,
well, that's what he's going to do on this show is Russ Stinson's with us this hour. And we'll be back to talk about rehabilitation and so much more.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
Very fortunate to get this guest on this hour, Ry Stinson, who is with Johns Hopkins Medical Center, and it's the rehabilitation network they've put together across the country is just phenomenal. And to address golfing needs as well is pretty outstanding that way. And certainly Rye, being a golfer himself, a pretty darn good one, as a matter of fact. It's great to have somebody like that, you know. So not success in the Maryland AM, but Philadelphia is hearkening. They're calling, and here's full circle, because I got to know Rye through Mark Sheftick. Mark Sheftick, we actually met at the U.S. Open, and then he moved over, and eventually he ended up at Sunnybrook, which is where he is, and where we find out that the Mid-Am is going to be in that area. So the Mid-Am will be at Jeffersonville Golf Club, which we had the opportunity to play a couple weeks ago. We talked about that, and the GAP organization, the Golf Association of Philadelphia, which puts that on and such. But I know that you're going to get a chance to go back to Sunnybrook and visit with Shefty.
Yeah, that's always a great thing. I didn't get a chance to play in the GAP Mid-Am, but I do believe that was at Jeffersonville, and then the GAP Amateur, or sometimes the Philly Amateur, as it's known, is hosted by 1912 in Sunnybrook. So that should be a phenomenal test. And GAP, like so many golf associations, they do such a fantastic job. And certainly all the mid-amateurs out there are grateful for all these different state associations that put on these events year in and year out. It's always nice to see a lot of familiar faces and that kind of thing. Obviously, any time you get to visit Shefty, that's fantastic. He does such an amazing job with both playing and coaching. That's something I very much look up to him for, as far as somebody who can play at such an exceptional level, and also be such an elite level instructor and coach and mentor for so many other teaching professionals. So definitely special stuff.
Yeah, he didn't get to the PGA Professional Championship this year, but there's a guy that works it hard. Now, the only part of Sunnybrook I saw was the backside of the range. That's where he took me. He wouldn't let me get on the golf course. So next time I see him, he did actually text me this week, and I didn't tell him that you were coming on the show. But we met Rye through Sheftick, because he knows a lot of people, and Shefty's. I'll say this on the show. I'll never say it to him per se, directly anyway. But he's a pretty good guy. So we could do worse with a company like Mark Sheftick.
He is in fact not that terrible. If he's listening, and it's a shame that's recorded. But he actually one of my favorite things to do, obviously outside of the work I do at Hopkins and teaching and that sort of stuff, is I love working with Shefty and his players at his performance facility. It's an awesome combination experience for folks, where I get to come in and go through a full physical screen and evaluation and see just what's going on in that regard. And the nice thing is that oftentimes either we do them there together, so we can combine the lesson in case there's something physically that's there, so that Mark's instruction and cues and things match up very well with what somebody is in fact able to do, or what they may be working toward. And if not at the exact same time, the coordination is excellent. So I equate that very much. With what I do on Wednesdays, I do a same day clinic, hand therapist, hand surgeon, Dr. Nanis and I, we share a desk together and see patients together. And I think that's just the best way to do it. So there's no confusion between surgeon and therapist. And then from a golf performance standpoint, things are pretty clear, and there's no confusion between instructor and healthcare provider or somebody on the training front as well. Obviously this information is coordinated, and I think that's a wonderful model. And obviously we owe a lot to the folks at TPI for modeling that. And at the same time, I'm sure countless other healthcare providers in my field and other fields who model that same thing on a regular basis, because it's just much easier from a patient standpoint. And it's certainly, honestly, it's kind of the way that, you or I would like to be treated if we were going through something health-wise, or honestly, if we're committed and motivated to, hey, I want to perform better at this, and I'd like to get there efficiently. Doesn't mean I need to get there tomorrow, but to feel productive and that my hard work is going towards something that matches what I can do, then I think that's a win.
Absolutely fascinating. As we're with Ry Stinson, we'll be back for the second half hour after this break.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Ry Stinson. I think he's now our rehab guy, but I'm not really sure which moniker to put on him. I can't put fitness on him because I gave that to Kai Fusser, who worked with Annika for a long, long time, although he doesn't, we don't really call it fitness. He's kind of reshaping, you know, that person physically that way. But you're helping along the way as well. So, what would you call yourself besides a specialist? Obviously,
I've got so many different names. So my clinical title is I'm an occupational therapist, certified hand therapist, and clinical specialist, which is just, that's another, you've been doing it long enough, you reach a certain level, whatever. But basically, my clinical day involves and has involved for years treating folks with all sorts of complex upper extremity related injuries. So think shoulder to hand. So hand therapy is kind of a confusing name. But occupational therapists and physical therapists can both hyper-specialize and go through some additional expensive testing and studying, all sorts of stuff, and an hour's collection to then sit for a board exam to basically say to patients, hey, I'm really, really familiar with these specific things. And to me, that's what most specialty certifications really mean. So the ones that I include after my name are ones that I actively use and pursue, and they're there not to say, oh my goodness, the best ever, but more to say, hey, you know, if you're looking for this, this is certainly the right spot, or if you've got this sort of stuff going on. And then from a golf performance standpoint, obviously, Greg and Dave have done such a great job with the DPI certifications and education process. So I've obviously gone through all those levels, and as well as the SFMA, which folks in the rehab world are also familiar with that term. It's kind of an industry leading, just generalized way of at least starting to look at overall movement versus just saying, hey, everybody that comes in for this specific thing, then we're just going to look at that and put our blinders on. So, all sorts of stuff, but that's the wheelhouse. So if you ever have any questions about something, shoulder, elbow, wrist, or hand, I can't be any more in the wheelhouse clinically, and the likelihood of me having seen it and seen it probably hundreds of times is probably pretty high.
And there's a song, it's knees, shoulder, thighs, and hands, something like shoulders. Yeah. I knew that would come in handy when I learned that as a kid, obviously. I know that wasn't the name of the song. Please play along, play with the host from that standpoint. But you mentioned hands and upper extremities, and I do want to talk about thoracic as well this hour.
Yeah,
so you
absolutely
want to start with the hands and the importance there, because hands are very, very important in the golf swing. Or do you want to start with the upper body, the thoracic, etc.? Where do you want to go? Let me just say, speaking of go, apparently this guy went to Connecticut and they made him a professor. So my guys keep finding out information. They're peeling back. They're like, this.
You got to stop Googling. I mean, I swear. I just stopped posting things on LinkedIn. Jesus. Very, very fortunate to have been up in at the University of Hartford over the weekend as part of being an adjunct faculty member there for their physical therapy department. So So one of the things that sometimes can happen is that there's sort of a divvying up of information per super specialty. And sometimes if you're not in this certain specialty, you may not get as much experience or knowledge in a certain area. So we try to fill that gap as people are going through physical therapy residencies or fellowships. And I love filling that gap as far as elbow, wrist, and hand content, shoulder content. But it's interesting you bring up some of the thoracic stuff. And if you're listening, you may be wondering why does my, person here treating my elbow for say, golfer's elbow, tennis elbow, so on and so forth, care so much about how I'm rotating or how I'm moving in general. A really great question that we ask clinically all the time when folks come in with various tendinopathies or let's say atraumatic injuries, is we always ask like, hey, is this area a problem or is it a superpower? And sometimes the elbow can actually be a superpower, but it might be making up for a shoulder that's missing some muscle or has some muscle power deficits, or a rotary athlete who really isn't getting much rotation from their trunk or thoracic spine region. And that's kind of that area where your ribs are attaching to your spine. Those are all kind of really key elements as we sequence ourselves and create force from the ground up. So those are all kind of really key things that we certainly pay attention to. You're not just an elbow, you're not just a wrist or whatever. You're a person who happens to be having some symptoms here and work that through and pay attention to how you move. I mean, I think that's kind of standard. I imagine that's pretty standard care these days. So at least I like to think so.
Well, the one thing I have discovered over the years with all the with physical therapy experience is that pain origination. So where you're feeling the pain isn't necessarily where the problem exists. And I find that fascinating. I'll use that word again, fascinating to have come upon that.
Yeah. Pain is most certainly a very complex topic and it can be very confusing, especially if you're experiencing some type of referred pain. So, hey, maybe my hands are numb and tingly, but that actually might be coming from my neck or even sometimes from some soft tissue around my shoulder girdle complex or that sort of stuff. So it can be very, very confusing. And when pain persists, obviously there are some adaptations from a brain standpoint in terms of how we perceive even different parts of our body in different regions. There's so many levels to this. There's lots of complexities here. But I think, and of course, there's also scenarios like, hey, I fell and I broke my wrist. The problem happens to be at my wrist. Absolutely. So I want to be clear that that's not, the scenario every single time. So I think we just try our best to consider all of these things. And it's really incredible how dynamic the body is. There's so many moving parts, so many systems. We think very much from an orthopedic or a neurological standpoint when it comes to outpatient rehab. But the other reality is that there's so many underlying health systems, our cardiovascular system, our lymphatic system, endocrine system, so many things that are having influence on how much inflammation or X, Y, or Z is going on in our body or changes to our soft tissues. It's a lot of factors. And sometimes that can be kind of overwhelming to have to think about all that at once, and which is also why there are people for this. And having a kind of a comprehensive network, a lot of times people are craving, hey, you know what, I'd like to have all my stuff at kind of it through one place. So people are looking at and talking to each other within that network as far as, hey, that information is readily available versus, I might have a rheumatologist here, an endocrinologist there, an orthopedist here, so on and so forth. So it's certainly a benefit in the healthcare system where folks have and share all of the same information and have access to communicate with each other.
Talk with Ryan Stinson on Teed Up with Keith Jones. And we figured out, I can't call him professor. I will. At times I'll call him professor.
I don't know if I'm qualified yet.
That's right. He's not qualified. He's certified from that standpoint. But I think we're just going to call you the resident therapist. This is good. The therapist. So we can talk our golf game through you, and you can address other things. We'll just put it with capital T, and we'll make it the official therapist for this show from that standpoint, because you know a lot about a lot of stuff, so which is always good. Appreciate it as a host, and I hope the listeners appreciate it as such, because we try to bring only the best guests to this show and learn stuff along the way as well. So in talking with the instructors, which would be Scheftig included, I guess, whether it's Toski or McLean or right down the line, to Scheftig. The guys that know talk about the importance of hands in the golf swing. And Toski did that recently on the show. And people grip the club too tightly and then thus restrict their ability to move their wrists, their hands, etc.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about addressing those when you're working with a golfer specifically, and you're working the rehab and such?
Yeah. Well, I mean, on my end, obviously, I want to make sure that, let's say, the moving parts are moving. So if we think about this kind of like a car, like all the connecting pieces and such are there. So it's sort of like a range of motion. Like there should be some functional and normative ranges at your wrist and your hand, your fingers, so on and so forth. Sometimes there are some subtleties. Sometimes there are some underlying and just general abnormalities and congenital changes and things that can be kind of subtle, but sometimes relevant in a golf swing. Or how we would go to grip. For example, sometimes people have an extra tendon that connects the tendon that bends the tip of their thumb and their index finger, so they can't bend the tip of their thumb without bending their index finger or whatnot. Little things like that can kind of help dictate or inform folks about what might be helpful from a grip formation standpoint, that kind of thing. But same deal, we're also looking at muscle power and function, and the hand is a fascinating thing, and sometimes it's looked at as being kind of confusing because there's just so many moving parts. There's 8 little carpal bones, 27 bones, all these muscles, and a lot of the things acting on the hand start up at your forearm and your elbow, but they're balanced out by these smaller intrinsic, starting and ending in the hand, intrinsic muscles. And maintaining a balance of those things throughout life gives us so much function. So those are huge pieces. And then if I could enter in a third bucket here, is this sort of our GPS system in the car. So we've got the engine, the muscle power, all the parts. And I kind of refer to this with patients a lot of times as the kind of computer GPS system. It's sort of our awareness of where we are in space. And our hand and our wrist are just loaded with these sensory receptors. So outside of your eyes and your face, your hand is getting so much input from your brain to perform all these different things. And sometimes when that is thrown off, either via from injury, it can be kind of challenging for folks to put their hands back in the same place. So you see a lot of folks work very diligently on different strategies for getting their hands on the club in the same way over and over and over again. And effectively, it's essentially proprioceptive retraining. And it's a skill. And being very good at that is certainly advantageous for any racket sport because it helps you control the face. If your hands are in the same space, you've got the face in the right spot, all of a sudden, it's much more easy to orient it in space as it's whipping around you. So those are all kind of some basic key criteria that we look for. And that certainly we want to make sure are present in terms of golfers. And then there's just the general awareness of like, hey, well, what are these things supposed to do? How am I supposed to have my hands on? That's oftentimes a huge aha moment in terms of like what things look like when the face is square and so on and so forth, and what a proper grip is. And so, the best grip for you to form consistently. So that being the proper grip. Obviously there's so many different ways to hold on to a golf club. That just needs to match you and your ability to consistently control the face.
Oh, you mentioned TPI earlier, Titleist Performance Institute, and Dr. Greg Rose. That was one of his first test dummies way before he started TPI, Advantage Golf and such. And the guy's phenomenal. I mean, he's an engineer by degree, and just what he's. I really think he's kind of the godfather of that industry. The way they went about it, and Wally Uline took notice of those guys, and Dave has his Phillips has his great part of that as well. But when you talk about them versus what you're doing, what's the association? How does that come together?
In terms of you. In terms of me. For me, it just feels right anytime you're speaking about terms that are responsible for being in the golf industry, and honestly, largely from those two folks. I don't know. I always inherently just give them some kind of a shout out and almost as an homage, as if we would with any other lecturing professor or somebody who, you know, has a test named after them or something like that, because it's sort of something they've lamented in the space in the industry. But a lot of these things are major concepts that are very prevalent in the rehab world, and they've just been made present and knowledgeable to the golf world, honestly. So for me, I think one of the cool things and I encourage other clinicians, whether I'm teaching a continuing ed course or lecturing on some topic, learning something from somebody in a field that's different than you, I think is a magical thing. So even taking a certification that's supposed to help you with treating golfers or being more familiar with that, you may end up learning a couple of things that, oh wow, that's really relevant to my general practice and how I might sort of think through things or describe things. It's just the same way that so many physical therapists and occupational therapists have learned so much from so many incredible trainers, as you were mentioning some great trainers earlier. So I think I probably think about it in those ways. Obviously, some kind of collaborative effort, I would really, and I've talked with Greg briefly about this somewhat recently too, about adding in some more elbow, wrist, and hand content to the kind of the TPI education process. I think that would be helpful. Sometimes it's a little tricky to sort it out and for everything to kind of fit and flow. And just the real reality is having enough time to sit down and do it. I think that's probably the bigger thing. They have a lot of stuff going on. And as you can tell, I've got a couple of balls in the air as well in terms of life. So, that probably answers that one.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's one of the things about Greg. He's always open to input and other things that'll improve the programs and all the teachings that they do with TPI, which is a fantastic organization. Greg's we're gonna try to get him on later in the year. So he's been traveling so much that it's difficult to get on his schedule, but he's obviously, those that listen to the show know he's been on numerous times in the past, and like I said, one of his original test dummies, and believe me, deficit on test and dummy. But we're with Ry Stinson, our official therapist, and we'll be back to wrap up the show after this break. I always like it when my guest makes me laugh, and sometimes I make myself laugh, because that's just kind of sums up golf in general and what we do. And you know, when I can bring golf and radio and such together, it's a great thing. It's a great day, great walk in the park any day, that type of thing. So congratulations to you on all your accomplishments of late. Obviously your resume keeps growing, professor, guy who qualified for the... Come on, you're gonna play.
I was just just a guy lucky enough to be surrounded by
other guys,
enough wonderful people to help me out along the way. That's pretty much it. But that's it.
But you also can play. You are far and away a very good player because trying to play in any state's amateur event is a big deal. And I was talking with the Gap guys that I got to know a few weeks ago in Jeffersonville, or at Jeffersonville, during the PGA Championship, being played at Aronimink. It's a great organization, but they said the number of applications that they got for golfers, it was in the thousands. It was insane.
That's crazy.
You know, because it's just that many players that want to do it, and they want, you know, and there are a lot of good players. That's the other rub, right? You try to stay positive and such, and then you run into, doesn't even have to be a young gun. You run into somebody who just knows their game, and it takes me back. I was playing a public course four years ago, trying to support the local links, and this guy was probably pushing 80, but he was in his upper. I think he told me he was 78. He did tell me whatever, and he didn't have game off the tee, but this guy around the greens, and he knew his game, and he put that ball in the hole, and shot a really good score for that toughened you just have, it is a lifelong sport and such, but you just never know. That's the key, is learning your game, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, timing is a big deal. It's kind of cool that so many people are playing, and at the same time, you're also like, man, golf wasn't quite this popular before. The courses weren't as crowded, and the fields, if you don't sign up, actually, I thought about signing up for the Gap Mid-Am. I thought, oh, maybe I can get up there. I don't have enough PTO. I'll get some time. And I went to sign up, and the sign up, I think, was at 9 a.m. or something like that. And I went to sign up at, I think had a break in the action or something at 10:15 or whatever. And it was already, there was already 10 people on the wait list. I was like, I mean, talk about being popular. I mean, that's wild. So you have to sit there like you're checking in for a Southwest flight back in 2015 and just, hit the button and hope for the best. For so many of these things, if you get to the point where you're already qualified, then oh boy, what a beautiful place to be, and just enjoy that, because it's a crowded space. But I think that makes the game better. It makes everybody a little bit better. You gotta show up and ball out and do your best, and that's. A lot of people are really good at golf, and lots of things.
They are. And speaking of which, I know one guy that always proposes getting on the wait list or being an alternate, and that would be John Daly. So there's a guy.
He did okay as 13th alternate or whatever. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you see, you never know the way it falls, and as he says, it's changed his life, and indeed, and. He's always an inspiration. He's kind of the antithesis of today's golfer, but he enjoys his life. He enjoys the game of golf, and he's still really good at it. And I heard him say recently, "Had I known I was gonna," because he's in his 50s now, so it's like, "Had I known I was gonna live this long, I may have taken better care of myself."
I feel like he connects so well with so many people, and maybe even more so now in this generation, where some of the barriers and the stuffiness to golf has come down a little bit, and I will say this, I actually use him as such an awesome example from a core control standpoint. So usually when folks look at him, one of the first things is sort of say how out of shape or whatever, that kind of stuff. And the reality is to be able to control that much incredible mobility, albeit with certain amounts of mass and otherwise, but honestly, to have that kind of control about arms and trunk with that much rotation is really incredible.
Ryan, awesome as usual. Ryan Stinson, our resident therapist on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level. Long live John Daly, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.